The 115th Congress has 55 members in its freshman class, depending on how you count. 47 members of the freshman class signed a commitment to civility. The idea came from Republican Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana. The pledge said the members recognized the growing division in politics that was fueled by vitriol in public discourse. We're discussing civility this hour of the Joy Cardine Show. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our guest, Carolyn Lukensmeyer, is executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. It was founded in 2011 at the University of Arizona, a few months after the shootings outside Tucson that critically wounded the then U.S. Representative Gabrielle Giffords. It's an organization that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility in our political system. Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Kate. I'm delighted to be with you.
So as we mentioned in the beginning, the new Civility in America poll finds that 69% of Americans say there's a major civility problem in our country, a record high since the inception of the poll in 2010. What do you make of this reaction?
Well, Kate, because we work a lot with the public, I have to say that the results of the Weber-Shandwick poll this year didn't surprise me. Americans were particularly disturbed by the vitriolic rhetoric and even unseemly behavior at lots of political rallies during the presidential cycle in 2016. So I think the survey reflects that Americans are very, very concerned that our social norms are really shifting.
How would you define the concept of civility and then what it means to you?
Well, as you can imagine, Kate, this is something that we get asked very, very frequently. And shortly after I took this position, I actually decided to look up the etymology of the word. And it turns out the root word is a French word from the 14th century that actually means the status of citizen. And if you follow the shifting meaning of the word over time, it really focuses specifically on what does it mean to be a citizen? What are the rights of citizen? So often in terms of people's common reaction to the word civility, you know, people who don't like the word think, well, that just means be nice to each other. But it has come down to have a kind of less deep meaning than the original roots of the word. And at NICD, we hope to have our work bring back more of the original roots of the word.
And these original roots of the word, help us understand that a little bit more. What does it mean to have this common for the good of everyone? Go deeper into that for us.
Well, I think the idea is that civilization requires people to have a set of norms that enable us to actually collaborate, to do work together, to have a high quality of life together in our neighborhoods, in our communities. And that includes the capacity to live with people who are very different than we are. And particularly I shift into what's the core meaning of democracy. And I think at its roots, democracy is a conversation. And the quality of that conversation determines our capacity to live together and determines what the quality of that life together is all about.
Well, so if the question you always get is, what is civility? The second most frequent question you must get is, what's driving this rise in incivility?
That is indeed, Kate, often a question that we encounter. You know, I think from my perspective and a lot of the research that we've done at the University of Arizona, we actually have a network of researchers from across the country that are looking at questions of what's civility, what's incivility, what causes incivility, what are the leverage points that can shift from incivility back to civility. So what we are learning is that the causes are usually systemic and structural. So for example, in our political system, a root cause that most people will acknowledge is the influx of just huge amounts of money into politics. I like to use the touchstone of the year 1992 when Bill Clinton ran against George Herbert Walker Bush. In total, their two campaigns and the Democratic Party and Republican Party in total spent $93 million in that run for the presidency. If we go back to the 2012 election between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, which was the real first presidential election after Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, which essentially allowed any amount of money from any source to be in political campaigning, each campaign, just Obama's campaign and Romney's campaign, each spent $1 billion. Authorities who have done as much research as they can believe that in total, in that election, almost $7 billion was spent. So this has enabled anyone with a perspective to buy ads. They don't have to be linked to the candidate. They don't have to be linked to the party. And there are no standards. There's no ethics about what those ads can say. So negative campaigning has always been part of American politics, Kate, as you well know. But the vitriol, which is what the freshman class acknowledge in their statement, the vitriol in political rhetoric and particularly political campaigning has really increased in the last decade plus. A second causative factor is the kind of gerrymandering that has now truly run amok across the country. And this is done by both parties. It does happen at the moment in the last few rounds. More state legislatures and governors have been controlled by the Republican Party than by the Democrat Party. But it is important for listeners to know that this practice has been engaged in on both sides of the aisle. I lived in Ohio for 24 years, and in the early years that I lived there, you could look at a map and look at a district on a map, and it would be coherent. It would have a set of boundaries around a particular number of people, because the districts are always determined by a percentage of the population. Now, if you look at that map, I'll take Akron-Cleveland area. One of those districts has been redesigned. It looks like a thin snake that runs along more than 300 miles. It's carefully designed to close out certain minority populations from that district and to include certain conservative populations in that district. And you could give any number of examples like this. But what this has led to, which the Center for Democracy and Ethics has identified and writes about a lot, is that every year of the 435 districts in the House of Representatives, only somewhere between 25, max 30 of them, are ever really competitive. In the rest of them, the incumbent is safe, or at most would have a challenging primary. So these are just a couple of examples of the structures in politics that have led to a much more highly volatile and negative set of campaigning experiences.
But if we know that these are the symptoms and that these are causing this major political divide and just this incivility, why don't we do something to change that?
Well, both of the examples that I gave you, Kate, are very tough things for an ordinary American to try to change. In fact, there's a tremendous amount of foundation money and some private individual donors who are working very hard to change campaign finance laws. And there is an organization that's having its 25-year anniversary this year called Fair Vote that some of your listeners might want to get involved in, that have worked very hard on issues that impact voting, like gerrymandering, like majority-take-all votes. We didn't speak yet, Kate, about the impact of the information age and the extraordinary explosion of the Internet as a source of news to the impact on the way Americans receive their factual information.
And we're going to get into that aspect here coming out of a break. We're talking right now with Karen Lukensmeyer. She is Executive Director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. When a gunman suddenly opened fire Wednesday at a ballpark where congressmen were practicing for the annual congressional baseball game, Senator Jeff Flake took cover in the dugout. After the shooting stopped, he ran onto the field, applied pressure to Congressman Steve Scalise's gunshot wound. Flake said it brought back memories of the 2011 shooting when he waited in a hospital hoping for good news about then-Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was a close friend. The National Institute for Civil Discourse was formed soon after that shooting. We're talking with its executive director, Carolyn Lukensmeyer. Join in the discussion, 800-642-1234. How did we become such bitter political enemies? We're exploring the rise of incivility in America and what can be done about it with Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She heads up the National Institute for Civil Discourse, based in Tucson, Arizona. It's an organization that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility in our political system. It wasn't long after a gunman opened fire on members of a Republican congressional baseball team Wednesday that the emotional calls for unity echoed throughout Washington. But does it take an act of violence to bring people together? How long will this unity last? Is this unity? What do you think can be done to encourage civility in American society? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Carolyn, when we left off, we were about to talk about the rise of information, the internet, rise of social media, and what's been dubbed fake news. How does this all play into civility?
Well, the most important starting place of that conversation, Kate, is the shift when so many news outlets, if I talk broadcast first, began to shift to have a partisan point of view. So some decades ago, you would look at any of the major channels, whether those were ABC, NBC, CBS, or cable, and they all took a nonpartisan perspective in the presentation of the news. We're now living in a broadcast world where Fox News really came on the scene with a specific conservative bent, and MSNBC came on into the news world with a specific progressive bent. And then, of course, when many, particularly younger people, began to shift and get their news through internet outlets, whether that was first from bloggers or whether now it was dominantly from social media pages posted by other people, then what we have is people in an echo chamber with their news. They're actually only hearing perspectives that already match their own. And this, in this context, it's very, very difficult for an issue to be talked through when people can't even come to agreement on the basic facts about that issue, whether that's tax reform or immigration or building a wall. So this has led to further supporting the hyper-partisanship going on in politics and further supporting a very serious divide from a cognitive, intellectual point of view between people themselves.
In a statement responding to the release of the report, you were quoted as saying the vast majority of Americans want our public and political discourse to be civil. Why do you think there's such a disconnect between what we want to have happen and what's actually happening?
Well, that's a great question, Kate. I think because the causes of incivility tend to be structural or systemic, and those forces took us down this pathway where hyperpartisanship made Congress practically not able to function. You know, in 2016, only 9% of Americans thought Congress was doing its job. So that reality permeated our shared sense of what's happening in political reality, when on an individual basis, when we have an opportunity to respond to something like the American Civility Survey, are we happy with this change? Absolutely not. Kate, at the Institute, at post-election, we've gotten calls from many congregations, from ministers and faith-based, from rabbis, who talk about, I've been the pastor of a church for 30 years, and we've had a real community. Generations of families have raised their children here. Since this election, we have members in our congregation that still, 8 months later, are not speaking to each other. So what I think we have to understand that's really different right now than has ever happened before in modern politics is 8 months after the election, people who voted for Hillary Clinton are still vilifying, demonizing, and hating people who voted for Trump. And people who voted for Trump are still vilifying, demonizing, and hating people who voted for Clinton. So this divide has seeped into our everyday lives and judgments we're making about the people who live in our neighborhood or the people who go to our church or the people we encounter in the grocery store. So then the vitriolic language that existed in the 2016 campaign, this was coming from people, men who were running for the highest public office in the land. And essentially, it legitimated people speaking whatever came to their mind instantly, reactively. So we've now are seeing in the American public a kind of quickness to anger, a kind of quickness to really demonize the other, and people feel legitimate doing that. That's a tremendous step backwards in terms of the social norms that have been building toward a more inclusive society in the United States for more than 200 years.
Let's take a call now. Jeff in Hub City. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. What a great point to jump in. I really feel this. I mean, I think we're at our worst now. I think, one, as a culture, we don't really value education. And, I mean, no matter where you're at. If it's the Hollywood movie, we're making fun of it. It's not cool. And I think the other, we're in a time of great wealth disparity. I mean, if you look back to the Gilded Age, George Pullman was buried under 8 feet of concrete with railroad rails crisscrossed in it because he was so afraid that his corpse would be desecrated upon his death. He was so hated. This goes back. I think this is America. It's been that way. If you look at Jefferson fighting with Madison and everything that happened then, and you know, we have the internet really is just pamphleteering. It's the same old endless cycle.
Carolyn?
Jeff, you make a very, very good point. Political historians are beginning to really write more about this, that this potential or this streak or periods of this kind of violence are definitely part of our history. What is different is we seem to have come out of it in a longer period of time in modern politics than we had seen before. And in terms of the current incidence of language moving to violence, most political historians would say we haven't really seen it like this since Reconstruction. So there's no question. Politics has always had the potential of moving into this kind of behavior, but it is not what we've been seeing for literally decades.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your call at 800-642-1234. Carolyn, what might be the short-term or the long-term consequences of these things that you've described, people in a faith community not talking to each other 8 months after an election? What are some of these consequences you see down the road?
Well, and let me say, Kate, I don't want to leave it just at the faith community. We're actually getting calls from businesses, from major corporations, saying that in some of our teams, productivity has dropped because the relationships in the team have deteriorated as a result of different political views. So this is very widespread in our culture. And I think the impact is self-evident in the sense, like I just said, in the business community, productivity drops. In a religious community, the sense of this is our real home, this is a place that our children run and play together, has been threatened. What I also, though, Kate, don't want to only lay out what is clearly the negative results of this. What we're seeing at the Institute is in communities all over the United States, organizations and people are jumping up to say, we have to change this. This has gone too far. We now need to pull this back. So what we're doing at the Institute, we literally are launching a campaign to revive civility and respect. And we're making available to anyone in the country the kind of tools to have a reasoned discussion with another person. We're actually developing scripts and curriculum to be used in schools that will enable people to come back to a fundamental skill that's necessary in a democracy and necessary for us to live well together with people who think differently. And that skill, Kate, is how to listen for understanding. So I sit with you to listen, not to debate with you, not to convince you of my point of view, but literally to listen to you to understand what in your life experience has brought you to believe that Donald Trump would be the best president, or to believe that Hillary Clinton would be the best president, or to believe that we have to halt all immigration now, or to believe that we should follow what we've done for centuries, or for decades in U.S. and immigration. And our experience is when people take the time to do this and have the skill of actively listening, that first of all, the person who feels heard calms down, has a different way of presenting their ideas. So pretty soon you can sit face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, and hear about each other's difference without feeling the need to be in conflict about this difference. So I see really hopeful signs that we will be able to shift this. We will be able to shift this amongst the American public. The Institute also has a program called Next Generation, where we work in state legislatures. We've now worked deeply in 15 states. They're red states, blue states, from Maine to Ohio to Arizona to Washington, Idaho, where the Republicans and Democrats in the legislature are understanding that this has gone too far, and they are making themselves available to go through an experience called Building Trust Through Civil Discourse, where they learn to once again see each other as people instead of their party labels or instead of their ideological labels. So it'll take a long time. As Mickey Edwards, who's on our board and was in Congress for 18 years as a Republican member of the House of Representatives, as he said, you know, the social norms have now shifted. It's now legitimate to behave this way in language and in behavior. It'll take us decades to get back to where we once were, but we just have to dig in and do it.
We're exploring the rise of incivility in America and what can be done about it with Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She is executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. It's an organization that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility in our political system. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What do you think can be done to encourage civility in American society? Where do you see political discourse at its worst or at its best? Join in, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Susan now in Madison. Hi, Susan.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, can you, hi, can you turn down your radio first?
I thought I had it off. Okay, hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just, my comment really was that I truly believe that most.
Oh, we lost Susan there. Carolyn, I want to ask you, and I think Susan was on a cell phone. You know, we can't ignore what happened earlier this week. On Wednesday, a gunman opened fire on Republican lawmakers who were practicing for this charity baseball game that went on last night as planned, a huge turnout. This incident wounded House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, four others as well. While we don't know yet if the shooting was completely political motivated, I think we can all agree that this was a really horrible event. And from your perspective and from what you do, how troubling is what happened this week?
Well, I think, Kate, it's extremely troubling, and it's extremely troubling in the sense that we are seeing an increasing number of these incidents. You know, it's only 2 weeks before that we saw the incident of a white man attacking a young Muslim woman and African-American woman in Portland, Oregon. Three men jumped courageously to their protection, two of whom died in standing for what's right. The incident that happened between the congressman running for office in Montana attacking a reporter. You know, we have gotten to a place where anger and hate is moving from speech to violence. And these kinds of incidents are extremely troubling. The one in Alexandria, I mean, there's nothing more American than baseball. And if people cannot feel safe at a baseball field, if families cannot feel safe, if children cannot play at a baseball field without having to worry about there being the potential of a violent incident, this really is fraying at our capacity to live together.
Well, Lisa on Facebook writes, people post things in comment sections that once upon a time they'd never say to someone's face. Now people are becoming, she says, keyboard cowboys out in real life, and that doesn't bode well for civility. Carolyn, can you address our online behavior, and have we turned into keyboard cowboys, as Lisa suggests?
Well, it's fascinating that Lisa used the metaphor of cowboys, because at NICD we often talk about that the internet space is now like the Wild West. Mm. And a positive thing in that arena is the people who own the social media platforms are taking serious consideration about what they can do in the structure of the platform to bring more moderation so that people's comments can't go viral if they are completely vicious and vitriolic and unacceptable. It is really a challenge. I think, you know, there's great social science research about the fact of anonymity on those platforms, the fact of quickly getting your fingers to the keyboard before you stop to think. We now work with a lot of members of the legislature, as I mentioned, and many of them are the targets of this kind of vitriol on social media messages as well. And the ones that we have worked with have taken a stance of where they can, it's easier with email than with social media, but where they can, they actually do track down the person and speak to them voice to voice. And you will not be surprised, Kate, in 100% of the cases where they're able to get a hold of the person immediately says, well, I don't really mean it that far. I guess I didn't use the language that is really what I meant. So people back off immediately when they are in contact with a person. So this is something we need to pay close attention to, and we need to bring it into schools in terms of the way we create awareness among young people about how they're using these platforms.
Well, quoting an opinion piece in Bloomberg News yesterday, it does take strength to be civil. Being nasty is easy, but the fact that it's easy doesn't mean that it's right. The piece goes on, civility is a sacrifice that we make for the sake of our common life. We're discussing civil discourse this hour with Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She heads up the National Institute for Civil Discourse. You can join in this conversation. 800-642-1234 is a time to start holding people accountable for less than civil behavior. Join in or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Back after this news. Republicans canceled votes in the House. They gathered instead for a brief session during which they prayed and thanked the Capitol Police. This after the shooting Wednesday at an Alexandria, Virginia park that injured five people, including high-ranking Louisiana Republican Steve Scalise. He's still listed in critical condition. Many called for toning down the rhetoric that has continued at a fever pitch after a highly divisive presidential election. Will civility take hold? What does it take to bridge the political divide? Join in 800-642-1234. Carolyn Lukensmeyer stays with us. She's executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. Let's go right to the phones now. Janet in Oshkosh. Hi, Janet.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a comment and something I'm doing. One thing I wonder about the incivility is, and this is going to sound feminist, but the privileged white male, so to speak, is lost a lot of power. Women are getting more positions than people of color, and I see a lot of, I wonder if a lot of the anger isn't coming from that. And one thing that I'm doing is, you know, it's little, but on my Facebook page, I'm saying that I'm not going to like, comment, or share any negative political information. Sharing fact-based, you know, information is one thing, but the negative stuff I'm not going to engage with. And the other thing I've made is a red and blue yin and yang symbol, as to me, a symbol of, you know, every good, there's bad. You know, there are some things I think we all can agree on. So, and that's my comment. I'll hang up.
Janet, that's your choice about what you're doing on your Facebook page. We've actually heard that from a lot of Americans across the country, and it's a great thing to do because the more people who choose not to allow any negativity that gets started to be shared and passed on is all a step in the right direction. Excuse me, Kate. Mm-hmm. I realized when I spoke about this campaign to revive civility and respect, I didn't tell your listeners how they could join in. And particularly, just like Janet, we hear from thousands of people who say, "What can I do?" And we hope you will join us. Just go to our website, nicd.arizona, spelled out, .edu. And if you join us, there are lots of examples of things you can do in your neighborhood, in your community, to actually help us bring back civility.
Well, Janet also brought up the question of whether, because we're becoming a more inclusive society, fewer white men in power still holding, though, is that influencing at all civility?
Well, if you look across American history, mostly driven by economics, there is no question but what, as each wave of immigrants came into our country, which we couldn't be the country we are without them, people who felt like they were being shoved aside did react with anger and often did react with trying to suppress that new population group, whether it came from Italy or Ireland or Germany or Scandinavia. Now they happen to be coming more from Latin American countries. And the recognition that women's status in the United States has profoundly changed since the 60s and 70s. I don't think there's any question, but what social change always disrupts the status quo, and people's reaction to that disruption does definitely include a sense of my well-being is threatened, and I'm upset about that.
Let's take another call now. Bob in Richland Center. Hi, Bob.
Hi. My statement was that several years ago in the U.S. House of Representatives, when the Senate and U.S. House of Representatives met, there was a South Carolina representative that stood up and said in the open assembly to President Obama that he lies. Now, that should have been punished. That should never have been acceptable.
Richard, I think, excuse me, you're with Richland Center, you're Bob. I'm sorry. That example is referenced many times now by people from both parties as an early example of where social norms were absolutely violated in a way that there needed to be a stronger public response than actually happened. Just in terms of respect for the office of the presidency, that is by definition incivil, disrespectful behavior.
And the word lie itself has become so complicated.
Yes, Kate, we didn't talk much about it, but the perspective now of alternate news or fake news, or, and essentially what fake news is lying about the facts.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for calling in. John on Facebook writes, it's all the Republicans' fault. It's all the Democrats' fault. So long as we all cling to that same old tired narrative, incivility, hatred, vitriol will thrive. Keep playing the blame game, John says, and you'll keep getting the same result. Carolyn, politics does seem to be one big blame game, so to speak. Does that narrative need to stop? And if so, how?
Well, I think this is a time in which the American public is going to have to demand that it stop. There's been a tremendous shift from an ideological perspective in terms of who sits in the United States Congress. Up until about a decade and a half ago, there was an overlap between conservative Democrats and moderate Republicans, or vice versa. So there was often shared perspective on issues from different parties. We're now having a Congress in which there's no overlap whatsoever. There is no Democrat more conservative than any subset of Republicans, or no Republicans more liberal than any subset of Democrats. This actually doesn't represent the American population. And part of how we've, pardon me, I'm going to have to take that, a
call. That's okay. Let's take a call here, and you can get a drink. Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My comment is basically that we've got a complete lack of moral leadership all the way around. Our politicians are complete and utter liars. Our religious leaders, Muslim leaders calling for murderous activities are... Our Christian and Catholic leaders are just out of control I had to leave my church because my church leader kept saying about President Obama is a Muslim and not born in America, and just propagating lies that they knew were bold-faced lies. Our police force is full of murderous police.
Well, Mike, I think we understand where you're coming from, that this is not just happening on Capitol Hill. I mean, this is permeating into communities. Carolyn?
Well, there's no question. But in this period of time, we have a huge number of extremely egregious examples of leadership in every sector that have lost their moral compass. But what's really important, Mike, is to remember that in this same period of time, we do have leaders who have not lost their moral compass. And so what we have to do is, as Americans, not paint it with a complete broad brush that it's everybody, but discriminate in terms of those in leadership who still are acting on the fundamental values that allow us to live together peaceably, and support those people. Really step out and say a huge thank you. At the early part of the program, Kate talked about the commitment to civility signed by 46 freshmen in the House of Representatives, 28 Republicans and 18 Democrats. We all need to find out who those representatives are, and if one of them is your representative, we need to thank them. They're stepping up to say, we know political vitriol speech has created this problem, so we have to change it. So we have to be really discern as American people those leaders who are lacking moral leadership and those who are not, and put our strong support and collaboration behind those who are.
Well, Jennifer emailed us. She says, I have always challenged myself to stop and understand differing views to my beliefs. If I cannot grasp why others believe or support what they do, then how can I have a valid opinion? She says, this isn't easy. It takes time, but I find this method keeps me informed, and I'm better able to understand the place where others are coming from. That, to me, is the ultimate sign of respect, and I challenge others with this in hopes to help enlighten them.
Jennifer, you are exactly the kind of person who's understood how important this is, that we're looking to work with at the National Institute for Civil Discourse to bring these conversations to lead to understanding to more and more Americans across the country. We are inviting people like you to be what we're calling a community connector, to be someone who steps up and offers what you've learned how to do to other members in your neighborhood, in your community. Please look at our website, nicd.arizona.edu, and join us. We need your leadership.
And another interesting finding in this Civility in America report was the relative lack of incivility at work. And I was hoping before we end the broadcast here, you could comment on these findings.
Well, it is true that incivility in work is at a lower level than we're seeing it in the public square. But as I mentioned to you before, it also is increasing, not as seriously. But I believe the reason that that is true, that is the, it's the arena in which it's slowest to seep in the work setting, because our goals are so clear, because our livelihood is dependent upon our ability to be productive, and we cannot be productive if we're not in easy working relationships with the people around us. So I believe it's the structures, the shared goals, the norms, that the impact on me individually will be quite negative quite quickly if we choose not to be able to produce together. So it is the structure and the norms that makes it more difficult to be incivil at work.
Really quickly here as we wrap up, are you optimistic, Carolyn, that things can start to turn around in this country when it comes to civility?
Without question, Kate, I am hopeful. And I'm hopeful because of what we experience at the Institute, of so many Americans stepping forward, so many organizations, faith-based organizations, our partners in bringing back this civility and respect, our organizations like the American Bar Association Section on Conflict Resolution, organizations like the AARP, organizations like the League of Women Voters. So this problem has risen to a level that people understand we have to be active to respond, to bring back the social norms that have made this country great. And that makes me hopeful.
Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, Kate, thank you for having me.
Carolyn Lukensmeyer is the executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, an organization that works to reduce political dysfunction and incivility in our political system. This hour of the Joy Cardine Show was produced by Chris Molina. Michelle Johnson is our executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for the Joy Cardine Show, and it's always our hope that you find civil discourse here on the Ideas Network.